from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour, Byright Market in San Francisco's Mission District aims to be more than just a neighborhood grocery. It's a community hub focused on food and learning about local farms and sustainable eating. And the owners have just released a cookbook and ingredient guide called Eat Good Food, and they've recently expanded 18 Reasons, the space in which they offer food-centric programming such as pickling classes and potluck dinners. We'll talk with Byright's owner and its produce buyer. We'll talk all about how to find the freshest produce and what to cook this season. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Byright Market in San Francisco's Mission District is a pioneer in being a grocery store linked to farm production and proud of its products being local, organic, and sustainable. The store's managers are eager to teach their customers the best and healthiest ways to select food and buy food and to know where the food's products come from. Now, Sam McGonham, who took over the market in 1998, has published a book written with Dabney Goff called Byright Markets Eat Good Food, A Grocer's Guide to Shopping, Cooking, and Creating Community Through Food. And I ought to mention that there are recipes in this as well, some very good recipes, which are on our website, special recipes for Forum listeners, which you can access. We're going to maybe have some recipes before the hour is over, but we're going to talk about what they do at Byright Market, which is ask questions, as they say earlier in the book. Would we eat this ourselves? Would we feed it to our children? How was this raised, grown, or made? And what was the impact on the environment? And how are the workers treated? And can we feel good about eating this? Sam McGonham is here with us in studio. He's the owner of Byright Market. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Good morning. And it says Buganum. I want to put that into the correct pronunciation. And Simon Richard is also here. He's producer and buyer and in-house farmer for Byright Market. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, a bunch of tangerines you've brought in, huh?
Of course. It's in season. It's time. Time to taste.
Season is very important to you guys, right?
Yes.
All right. So when people come in, you kind of help guide them in terms of produce and season? That's a lot of what you do?
Yeah. I mean, that's the main focus on for me and my staff is to turn people on to what's in season in California and then also what's the best tasting stuff in season is most important.
Sometimes it's hard, though. I mean, finding, like, a ripe melon and being able to determine what a ripe melon can be challenging.
Well, this isn't the season for ripe melons.
No, I didn't mean to suggest that it was. I'm just talking in general.
But that's the first step. I think the season for melons is in California is short. It starts sometime in July and then ends usually in early October. So for me, that's when our staff focuses on melons and celebrates the season and works with a lot of the local growers. We're fortunate enough to have relationships with growers who harvest melons when they're ripe and when they're ready. So they make it easier on us as buyers to know that we're getting the product that we want. And then when we bring it into the store, you know, our customers can rely on our selections because the farmer has helped us. So it's kind of it's a trickle-down effect.
You own a farm in Sonoma, in fact, don't you?
We have about 2 acres in Sonoma that we're farming for Byright. Yep.
And there's herbs that are growing on the roof and honey that's produced there. And let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, on the roof at Byright, we have the bees for the honey. And then we have some pots that we're growing herbs on. You know, the herbs on the roof, we can't really sell them bunched in the produce department. A lot of those are used through the butcher department and through the prepared foods in the deli. But yeah, we're focusing every year. We try to produce more of our own food and educate our staff through that process.
Simon Richard, produce buyer and in-house farmer for Byright Market. And Sam McGonham is the owner of Byright Market. And we should mention that he founded, actually his family's been in it for a long time. He grew up in the market, but went out for a while as a chef in the restaurant business and then came home. You can go home again, huh? 1998, decided to establish this and become what your dad wanted you to become? The torch came on?
That's right. My dad finally got his way. when I left the market in 1986 when I graduated from high school, and I fell in love with food and cooking. And as you can imagine, anybody who's grown up in a family business, you get to the point where you really want nothing to do with it. And after 11 years, I didn't. And I wanted to be a cook. I wanted to be a chef. I fell in love with feeding people. And after 7 years of running my own restaurant, the opportunity to take the market came back, and through some convincing that my father, you know, exerted on us.
Didn't you tell your father I want to do it my way? It was like the Frank Sinatra deal.
Yeah. It's exactly what I told him. And you know what? He was astute enough to say, that's fine. And he let us borrow some money, and we gutted the space. We built a kitchen right in the middle of the store so that I could continue to cook food. And I wanted people to see us cooking it. I wanted it to be fully transparent so they could actually experience all the smells and noises.
Took the bars off. Got rid of the malt liquor, right?
We totally did.
Cigarettes. And you know, what's also part of your success story is the fact that there you were in the Mission. You're a kid. You're getting mugged a couple times before you're even 12 years old. And now you've got Delfino's. You've got Dolores Park. I mean, you've got a real community, which is really what you wanted, isn't it?
It is what I wanted. You know, one of the things that I'm most proud of, when we took over the market and opened in 1998, we started with six employees. And on the same commercial block between Guerrero and Dolores of 18th, there was probably about 35, 40 jobs on that block. And right now, there's over 450 jobs on the same block. And with the opening of another restaurant that's going to happen in the first quarter of next year, there's probably going to be close to 500 jobs.
Boy, you're helping Obama's numbers. That's going to be where? The Visadero? The new one is on Divisadero.
The next one's going to be on Divisadero, right next door to Nopa, an amazing restaurant, you know, that's owned by a guy that I went to high school with, that I've known since I was 14, and I'm really excited to have the synergy going on with them. And they're also very community minded. They do a lot of work in there, in nurturing the people that live there and feeding them, and to be next door to them is going to be awesome.
And talk about this, Sam, because your whole ethos is creating community through food. Now, how does that work, and what is that all about? I mean, spell it out for us.
Yeah. I devoted an entire chapter in our book, In Eat Good Food, about that, about creating community through food. I believe that any business really has a responsibility to the community that they serve, and the way we define our mission, creating community through food, is multifold. Our community really is our staff. It's our producers, the people who actually make the food, grow the food, who raise the food, and our guests. And each of them needs to be treated equally in order for that community to actually be sustained well. And food is the thread. You know, food is that blood that transfers between these members of community, and we not only believe in sourcing local food, but we source, you know, food that's produced from, you know, countries that have long-standing traditions, because we value the importance of food and culture and the influence that it's had on history. But and if it isn't locally produced, then we want it to at least be responsibly produced, because we're feeders. And we want to feed people well, and that's important to us. It's something that, you know, I know Simon strongly believes, and he had a tremendous influence on me.
We've got two feeders here with us, Sam McGannum and Simon Richard. We're talking about Byright Market and what they're committed to. And a lot of what you're committed to, Simon, is, being educators, I think, is a good way to describe it. You want to have your shoppers know where food comes from. And now, in wake of the World Trade Organization trying to get rid of perhaps knowing where food comes from, it becomes even more important. But you're all about taste and seasonal stuff. I mean, I sound like I'm giving an ad for you here. I'll get into some stuff that may be a little more critical in a moment. But seriously, I mean, this is what we're all about in public radio, obviously, is education. And it's a lot of, in addition to feeding people, what you're all about, community, but also education.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is that my food process started with farming in the mid-90s. So right away, I experienced the challenges of growing food. And ever since that experience, when joining Byright Market, I was able to, I feel, relate to the growers and what the hard work that they do, and have that relationship that allows me to get the knowledge that they have and pass that knowledge on to my staff. I couldn't educate my staff if it wasn't for the farms that educate me. And it's an ongoing process. Every season changes. There's always weather issues. There's always freezes. There's so many things that affect the local food scene that we need to, you know, educate our staff about and our customers.
You want to educate us a little bit? Tell us
sure.
At least briefly about favorite things to eat and cook at this time of the year?
Yeah, that's easy. Right now, I mean, a vegetable that, you know, 5 years ago I wasn't even familiar with, really, from my experience, is escarole. And it's a chicory. You know, it's an amazing bitter green that can be eaten raw, or it can be added to a soup, lightly sautéed. We love to encourage our customers to use that green this time of year and substitute it for romaine in a Caesar salad. It's just got a beautiful, crunchy tenderness to it. It's amazing. Broccoli de Chico. Everyone's been so used to eating just heads of broccoli. Now there's a lot of varietals from Italy that are sprouting broccolis that are a little more tender than broccoli. They have a little more sweetness. Just truly, truly amazing. And you can just saute, you know, you can blanch them, saute with olive and oil and maybe a little red pepper flake, and it's a quick and easy dish. So those are the veggies that I really enjoy right now.
Can I throw this to you too, yeah. Sam McGannum? I mean, this part of the year?
Yeah. I mean, God, what do I love right now? You know, another vegetable that Simon, you know, and I were talking about this morning was Ragusa squash, which is a great alternative to butternut squash or pumpkin. It's super dense and flavorful. Would make an amazing pie. Has a lot of flesh to skin ratio, so your yield on it is extremely high. But you know, more general things that I think that are really important for people to do is just to realize how every decision, every time they eat, they're having an impact on their community, on their food world, and little things like, you know, buying dairy from cows that aren't treated with hormones is an important thing you can do. Buying eggs from cage-free chickens is a really simple step that doesn't cost more money.
Wasn't farm salmon kind of a top seller for you?
It was. I mean, farm salmon was our number one fish SKU for years, and we were working with a great farm for a number of years. But one of the things that they couldn't guarantee was escape into the wild, and you know, it's one of the major issues with salmon aquaculture is that it has to be done in open waters, and so managing escape and managing the waste. That's generated by the farms, and not having it impact the wild population was critical. And so as we learned more about it, and as our guests learned more about it, they began to ask more questions, began to demand more wild salmon. So we started getting more wild salmon, and in the off season we would actually get frozen wild salmon. And people, you know, initially we were like completely against selling frozen fish, but we were buying it directly from the fisherman, and who was freezing it like within hours after catching it. And so it was extraordinary.
And
it was
going only to sustainable fisheries, right? I mean, at this point, you're only going to sustainable fisheries.
We're doing our best, yeah.
I mean, all of this suggests – I mean, you know, it's all – people kind of cheer this and they think, you know, this is all in the best interest of environmental and so forth. But what you get criticized for, and this is where I'm going to go a little tender, but are the costs. I mean, you know, I talk about Whole Foods as being whole paycheck and everything. Mm-hmm. And I know, for example, that you've had – perhaps because you do such a good job, capacity crowds, you had to bring a bouncer in. Because I mean, that's literally true.
I wouldn't call it a bouncer. But.
Well, he's kind of a gentle bouncer.
That's oxymoronic sounding.
But, you know, the truth of the matter was the fire marshals made it difficult for you, and it was probably maybe a little bit silly from what I understand. But you do have these crowds to deal with, and you do have – well, high costs in terms of – I mean, like the example of salmon, for example, you know, make a lot more money if you did it the other way. Mm-hmm. You decided to do it the right way. You decided to do the principal way. As a result, your costs go up. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem there, isn't there?
It would be a problem if we wanted it to be a problem, but I don't consider it a problem, because if we didn't do the right thing, we would be compromising our integrity. And if there's one thing that everyone, you know, everyone who knows me knows, that my, you know, I stand by everything that I do, and
but you know what you get criticized for? The yuppies can be the only ones to afford, you know, their yoga outfits to go. In a neighborhood. I mean, I don't want to get into class warfare stuff anything like that. But you're in a neighborhood where a lot of people can't afford the cost. That's reality.
Right. You're absolutely right. I think the part that's really unfortunate, Michael, is that because so much of our nation is eating poor food and is eating food that isn't good because it's cheap, and because we've begun to value price over quality so much more, we're unhealthy and we're spending that money. We're not spending it on food, but we're spending it on healthcare. We're spending 18% of our dollars on taking care of ourselves, preventing and dealing with diseases like diabetes and hypertension, cancer and heart disease that could be prevented if we ate better. You know, over a third of our children are obese and overweight. Two-thirds of our adult population are overweight.
And, so you're making people healthier.
We're trying.
You're trying, and I certainly give you accolades for that. But at the same time, the prices have to go high.
That's right. And, you know, the farmers need to make a living. The ranchers need to make a living. And we need to pay the fair price. Because if we solely relied on the industrial food system, which is all about efficiency and mass production, then we would lose an important aspect of community life. We would lose our farmers, and we're continually losing farmers every week in this nation. And that's something that we don't want to contribute to. And once people understand how their food choices impact other people and realize that our food actually comes from a human, the industrial system tries to dehumanize it. You know, we're stuck with these illusions of pasture, you know, things like Hillshire Farms, which aren't really green. There's no farm. It's just a factory. Aren't good for us, and they aren't good for the land.
We're talking with Sam McGannon, who has strong political opinions, as you can hear, the owner of the Buy Right Market. And with us also is Simon Richard, who is a produce buyer and in-house farmer with Buy Right Market. And this whole notion that comes across in your book, Simon, about people come into the store and they're guests. Yes. I mean, what could be better in the ideal of service? I mean, people always talk about, let me just editorialize here for a moment. People talk about Nordstrom's having good service. Nordstrom's have service that everybody should have. I mean, you should go into a store and you should be treated like a guest. That should be prima facie.
We model ourselves after what Nordstrom's does. I mean, that's a great example of what inspires us.
It's too bad, though, that one has to take Buy-Right and Nordstrom's and say those are the places where you can go to feel like a guest or to get that kind of service. It should be everywhere is really my
that's
point.
That's right. I agree. I mean, what we're doing shouldn't be the exception. It should be the norm.
So I'm going into your store, and I'm kind of looking around, and I don't know what I want and everything. There's somebody there to do hands-on with me right away?
Generally, there is. And if we've got this amazing policy. I hate to call it a rule, but it's the 10-4 rule. If a guest is 10 feet away from you, you make eye contact with them. If a guest is 4 feet away from you, you engage in a conversation. And if you've been to Buy Right, you know that it's really impossible to ever be more than 10 feet away from a guest. And so we're at a minimum making eye contact with everybody that walks in and generally saying hello. And
I like that guest word, though. I mean, you only hear it in In-N-Out or Buy Right, probably. I think that's about it. Well, we're talking about that. By the way, let me open the phone lines because I know there are many of you who would like to join this conversation. The book that was put out by Sam was written with Dabney Goff, is called Buy Right Markets Eat Good Food, A Grocer's Guide to Shopping, Cooking, and Creating Community Through Food. And we'll hear about some recipes in just a moment, but let me give the phone number out because I know there are many of you who would like some advice about seasonal cooking and about produce and about eating well and eating healthy and where the food comes from and all this sort of thing. We got a couple of men here who have a great deal of knowledge that they like to share. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, and you can join us now at that toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, our email address, forum@kqed.org, or join us other ways, Facebook page. You can send questions or comments to us by our Facebook page, or you can do it on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And can I press you for some good recipes that are in this book?
one of my favorites is a spaghetti with tuna, capers, chili flakes, and lemon zest. And one of the reasons that I love it is you can make it any time of year, and it costs less than $10, and you could feed 4 to 6 people with the recipe. It's simple. You can execute it as quickly as it takes to boil your pasta. You bring your water to boil. By the time you finish cooking the pasta, you've got all the rest of the ingredients prepped out and put it together. And it's a simple little take on linguine with clams, but it's using good canned tuna in place of it.
Sam McGannon, by the way, who is the owner of Buy Right Market. I think I said, Simon, did I make you the author of this book? I don't think I did. It's Sam along with Dabney Goff. Actually, speaking about pasta, there's a recipe in here from Delfino's. You got their spaghetti recipe.
We did. You know, and it's another recipe that I love because it's so simple. But one of the things that Craig at Delfino does, and it's such a great technique for anybody who cooks pasta, is that you pull the pasta out of the water well before it's al dente, when it's got still like a minute or two left to cook to get to that al dente point, and then you put it into the sauce, and then you continue to cook the pasta in the sauce, and so the pasta actually absorbs the sauce, and it intensifies and deepens the flavor. And it should just get cooked down to the point where there's just enough sauce to nap the pasta so that when you're done, there's nothing left on the plate other than a little residual oil. And Craig's recipe for, you know, it's basically, you know, pasta with marinara sauce, right? But it's a perfect recipe. And he was very generous to share it with us and to share it with our readers.
I got to go back to that restaurant. I went in there. I like the service. I like the food. I haven't been back in a while, but got me sort of salivating to go back there. What are you talking about here, Simon Richard, with the tangerines? What can we do with tangerines?
You know, they're extremely refreshing, so it's probably the easiest thing for kids. You know, I mean, that's the thing. We have a lot of moms that come to Byright, so we're always excited when the seedless fruit's in, because they'll come and they want the clementine.
Kids like candy. To peel them too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a great experience. You know, one thing we love to do heading into citrus season is we, in the produce section, we build the citrus wall. It's been named over the last few years, and we get up to
Citrus bomb.
The citrus bomb, the citrus explosion. Every year, you know, in California, we're fortunate enough to have, you know, if you really source it out, you have up to 25 varieties of citrus at one time in the market, which leads to, you know, many exciting things. We always try to have an exciting juice recipe for customers so they can come in and mix match the different citrus for a different style of juice. Citrus season is just starting, so I have the clementine, which is probably the most classic flavored.
They're passing this over to me here.
This is
called bribe the interlocutor, make him sweeter and make him happier.
Yeah, and the pudding, man.
If that's even possible, make me sweeter.
You know, most of the citrus that we get at Byright is grown down in San Joaquin Valley. There's a handful of orchards which are a little bit more local. The Satsuma that you have there is from Placerville, Side Hill Citrus in Placerville, an amazing orchard that sits in the foothills of the Sierras. So the long, cool nights really, really develop the sugars.
This is not good for a diabetic, but it is very good tasting, I must say.
Yeah.
We're coming up on a break here, and we'll go to your calls and emails when we return here. Thank you, by the way, for this really is quite tasty. 18 Reasons. Sam, can you talk about that?
Eighteen Reasons is it's you know, I want to call it an experiment of sorts. It's one of the funnest little projects that I've ever been involved in. It's our community space. It's about food education. It's about deepening our relationship with our community. Deepening our relationship with each other, deepening our relationship to food. It's a very small space, only about 400 square feet. You know, it used to be in a space that was half the size up until about 3 months ago, and it's a place where people can actually meet their neighbors. You know, they can sit at a table and before the end of the night actually know 20 or 30 other strangers that they would never have gotten a chance to meet before.
And you've one-upped it. It used to be 17, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the old signs, I remember, 17.
That's right. And the 18th reason is because if we didn't do it, nobody else will.
We're going to come back with our two guests. And like I say, they know a lot about food and more recipes and more fun and your questions and comments. Sam O'Ganim is the owner of Byright. Simon Richard is a produce buyer and in-house farmer for Byright. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Byright Market in San Francisco's Mission District aims to be more than just a neighborhood grocery. It's a community hub focused on food and learning about local farms and sustainable eating. The owners have just released a cookbook and ingredient guide called Eat Good Food, and they've recently expanded 18 Reasons, which we spoke about before we went to the break. It's a space in which they offer food-centric programming, such as pickling classes and book readings and potluck dinners. And we're talking with Byright's owner and his produce buyer about how to find the freshest produce and what to cook this season. And you can join us on this program. In fact, many of you may have questions about what to cook for the holiday season, and particularly with the holidays coming up, may want some advice along those lines about getting the best products and the healthiest and safest products, and also products that are ones you can eat with good conscience. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786, but you can also communicate with us by email. The email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can let us know what's on your mind by going to our Facebook page. Questions or comments can be posted on the Facebook page and can also be posted on our webpage, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And if you go to our webpage, you can also find some of the special recipes that are in the book, Buy Right Markets, Eat Good Food. And let's go to your calls. We begin with Ricky from Alameda. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment about the way people say they can't afford to buy these local sustainable organic foods. And my comment is that during these times, I think our priorities have shifted and been twisted, because once upon a time, before we had all the electronics and all the, quote, toys, unquote, we did eat the good, well-sourced foods, and it's not that we can't afford. We choose not to spend our money on better food, and instead we choose to spend our money on things like cable and the latest and greatest iPad or what have you. So that's my comment.
Okay. Thank you for the comment. I don't know if Sam or Simon want to respond to that comment, Simon?
I could really quickly. Those are my exact words a lot of the time about it. I think it's about prioritizing your spending. One thing that we like to encourage in the produce section of BuyRight and throughout the store, when our guests come in, our staff loves to help them create a menu. So if someone was to come into BuyRight and said, hey, I have $15 to spend, that's my budget, I'm pretty confident that person could leave the store with a bag of potatoes, carrots, celery, specialty greens, enough food to prepare, a few meals.
And if they have more money and they don't want to prepare the meals, you have food to go, you have dinners that are prepared and so forth.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of
community markets now do.
A lot of times I feel like the produce is very reasonable. But then there's the commitment in the time that's involved to prepare it. Yeah. And I think a lot of times that's another thing that people do not necessarily want is that commitment to have to prepare the food themselves.
Yeah, but that the response that I would also give is that that shift, that priority shift to things like cable and to the latest and greatest iPad don't lead to quality time with your family and with your friends. And so it leads to this time where you're zoning out, where you're socially interacting via the web, as opposed to sitting down, cooking a meal together, sitting at the table and sharing that meal together. And if we spent more time doing that, if if every family in this country just made that commitment to sharing a meal once a week together, there would be a tremendous shift in our mental health and our physical health.
We had Adam Gopnik on, and he talked about the importance of the table, about family really coming around the table and eating together. And I would second that emotion.
Yeah. 18 Reasons really helps us do that. I mean, that's the table is the symbol for us in so many ways. It just brings people around it, and then we can share.
Here's a web comment. I love your philosophy of food. How do I apply for a job with your organization?
submit your resume.
Another listener writes, is there an uglier word in the English language than butcher? The word connotes unnecessarily pain, horror, murder, killing, grief, all for what? Meat is synonymous with cancer, heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, early death. Is this by right?
No, it's not. And we encourage people to eat less meat, and we cut smaller portions, and we're working with our guests to encourage them to buy less expensive cuts so that they're not spending a ton of money on their meat. And we buy from farms that actually treat their animals humanely and harvest them humanely. Notice I didn't use the word butcher.
You work with Neiman?
We do work with Bill Neiman.
Is that how he pronounces his name?
It's Neiman. It is Neiman. Yeah. We work with him for his turkey program, and we do some work with him for his amazing beef program. He's come full circle now and is doing just a small amount of extraordinary beef that he's raising on his ranch in Bolinas, and he's going back to his roots. Bill's an amazing guy.
And here's Robert, who says, I'm excited about your Divisadero location. You know when it might open.
We're projecting sometime either May or June.
Okay, let us project some more callers on. Alexis, good morning. You're on.
Hi. I'm calling as sort of on the fence. I used to live in San Francisco for 10 years and did, you know, shop at Buy Right and all those things. But I'm also, you know, as an African-American that was really, really tied to the Western Edition black community that is no longer there, I get a little bit worried when I hear Buy Right and other such institutions talk about places like Buy Right as a community builder. And I keep hearing the word community as if there was no community there before. And for me, community is turning into a new synonym for privilege. And I feel like what's happening is we go into these places like the Mission and the Western Edition, rename it NOPA, and put in the Buy Right and say, yes, now everything's better. Now we can build community. Let's get this going, as if there was no community there to begin with. And it's also very hurtful that this idea that I hear that if people would just stop buying iPads and, you know, value this, that's not really what was going on. People have several jobs. They have many kids, mouths to feed. Are you going out into the community, what's left of the Western Edition, and saying, hey, let me have your $15 that you have for 2 weeks to feed your family and show you how? Are you doing that? Are you going into the community that's already there? Or are you just trying to create a new community and ignore the one that's there?
Yeah, it's a great comment, a great question. You know, one of the things that you know, really sensitive to is not coming in and, you know, full on swinging and trying to take over the community. You know, so many people have asked us, you know,
I don't think you could do that in the Mission District, Sam, all due respect, to take over a community. It's a very diverse and strong community.
It is, and one of the 18th Street, when we first went into it, that block, that neighborhood was a pit, and I hate to say that, but it was. You know, Dolores Park was the, you know, one of the key centers of drug trade in San Francisco, and most of the businesses on our block had metal bars and grates over their windows to protect against the robberies that occurred weekly. And it took a business like ours to take those bars down and to attract other businesses to come in and to synergize and to create jobs and to be more conscious of feeding people and doing business with them. And we're going to do the same thing in the Western Edition. You know, we're taking over a space that sold cigarettes, Twinkies, and Doritos and malt liquor. We're going to provide fresh food. We're going to provide food that's coming directly from farms. We're going to provide food that's coming from ranchers. We're taking a space that might have had two jobs created into one that's going to have over 50. We're going to integrate ourselves into that community and do what we do best, which is listen and respond and provide what that community wants. We're not going to go in and just like take Buy Right and plant it in there.
Let me thank Alexis for her call. You think organic food is better food? Generally? I mean, do you stand by the idea that it's better food and safer food? Because there's a lot of controversy about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there is a lot of controversy. Simon, do you want to answer that or do you want me to?
When I first started farming 15 years ago, I definitely feel that organic was definitely better food. As the industry's grown and more large corporations have gotten their hands involved in organic.
It's like agribusiness now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think the term has been diluted. I think as important as that is just it's being sustainable, using good farming practices. A lot of my favorite farmers choose not to be certified organic. But due to my relationship with them, we know their farming practices and we know that they use organic practices and we can share that information with our customers. So I don't feel that the actual certified organic is always the most important label to look at. It's hard if you go into a Safeway and stores like that where there's no one to talk to and you need to make a decision between a conventional and organic apple. I would go with the organic apple due to pesticide residue. But for me and the farms we're working, we're also concerned about, you know, as much as we can about the farm workers and the small farmers and keeping small farmers around and keeping local farms around and helping them keep the community of workers they have, you know, well-paid workers. And so there's a lot to it.
I think we have one of your farmers on the line here. Nick, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. It's Nick from Nick's Chicks.
Hey, what's
Nick.
Up?
Hey, not much. I'm just washing some eggs and I heard you guys. So, but I just, my comment was since I started providing your guys' store, it's been pretty remarkable with it's almost like a its own seal of approval. Like if I could, if my eggs are at Bayreuth, well, then they could be anywhere. You know, like there's such strict standards there.
It's giving you a passport, Nick? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I'm, maybe not a passport, but it's it almost, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, like, I'm not certified organic, just like what you guys are saying, but I sell to Bayreuth, and, like, I had to go through, like, you know, like, RAF gave me, like, the third degree of, like, okay, how do you do stuff, you know? And it's, like, extremely
brother.
Important to them to know exactly how their farmers farm so that the guests are comfortable with their purchasing.
Is that why you called up and said you were washing eggs now, just to let us know that everything is a clean operation?
Everything's good, yeah. Everything's all cleaned up. I'm going to be delivering later on this afternoon. But, you know, also there's like my eggs, which are, you know, since I do use organic feed and it's more labor-intensive being pastured and all that, there's my eggs. Then they also have, like, you know, what would be, like, less expensive eggs. And so it's not, they're not just catering to the people that can only afford the best of the most expensive food. There's the whole spectrum. And that's something I really respect because they are aware that there is that stigma that if you can eat local food, well, that means that you can only afford, you know, to buy the best. And that's just not true with Bayreuth. And I'm proud. Like, if I could only sell to them, I would.
So. Okay, Nick. We thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Let me go to some, before I go to more calls, let me go to some of the emails here. Here's Tyler. He says, I shop at Bayreuth all the time. As a rejoinder to Michael's comment about access, I'd give a different answer than Sam gave as a customer, which is simpler. Just go there. The place speaks for itself. The authenticity is manifest. Web comment. Well, that's actually a question for Sam of Bayreuth. Besides Bayreuth, what market does he most admire in the Bay Area and feel embodies similar values to yours?
That's another great question. I think there are several. You know, Michael, you and I were talking about Good Earth. You know, I think Good Earth in Fairfax does an amazing job. They've got a really strong value system. New Leaf Markets. They've got about 8 stores in the South Bay, headquartered in Santa Cruz. The Pasta Shop in Oakland, I think, is making great strides. It's also my alma mater, you know, a place that I started working 20 years ago. They're making great strides in doing a better job with sourcing and really having relationships with the producers. And then in our neighborhood, you know, a market that's been there forever that really, you know, I feel does an amazing job serving the community is Rainbow Market. You know, they provide not only a tremendous amount of support to the farmers that they work with, but also employ a lot of people and really take care of their people and you know, no question, a benchmark that we look up to.
Well, as you might expect, since I opened the whole question about cost, we're getting a lot of different responses to that. Here's one listener who writes, right now you're talking about the cost of food and how expensive good food is. The problem is that the cheap food has more costs than we pay for. Example, the waste, the pollution, the health costs. Buying good food means that we are paying the cost up front. Cheap chicken just means the costs are hidden and passed on, and producers do not pay for them. Another listener in the Mission, Michael in the Mission, says, I cry foul. Bayreuth is much more expensive than Whole Foods or Rainbow. The costs of classes and workshops at 18 Reasons are very high and prohibitive for most. Look at the customer and class demographics. Bayreuth is technically in the Mission, but few longtime residents patronize the place. Bayreuth caters to younger people and families with a lot of money. What do they plan to do about this? Well, I mean, first of all, do you plead guilty to that or innocent?
No, not in the produce section. I will put my produce up against Whole Foods prices any day. We strive to be competitive with everyone, and we know the value of our produce. So, we strongly believe that if you were to come into Bayreuth and you felt that the peach was too expensive, we're going to tell you the story behind that peach, and hopefully it's the best tasting peach you've ever had, and the value's there. You know, we work hard so that when someone comes into Bayreuth, everything that they choose is quality. They don't have to sort through things to find the best tasting peach. They can just take the peach off the top.
Let me read another email here, and then because you're talking about produce, and get Sam to respond overall. This is Joseph in San Francisco. Says, I completely agree appreciate your guest's ideology, but I think he's fallen into a trap that so many privileged progressives do. The poor don't value cost over quality because they have misplaced priorities. They do so because they're poor and can't afford to prioritize quality. The solution isn't to help the less fortunate reprioritize, but to drive the cost of good food down. We will never solve the obesity epidemic otherwise. Sam shaking his head in agreement.
Absolutely right. And I never said that the poor need to reprioritize. I think as a society, we need to reprioritize, and that includes everybody. I wish the price of good food was lower, but we're paying the true cost. The cheap food is cheap because we're subsidizing it. We're paying for it one way or the other, whether it's through our tax dollars or through our health. And it's costing us a lot more than we think.
Let me read a few more responses on this, and then we'll go to more of your calls. This is a listener who, Chelsea, who says, how much I should pay for food is something I think about a lot. I'm 24. I live in the Mission District. And though I can afford to purchase all organic, humanely produced food, doing so is a trade-off. I'm especially intrigued by the knowledge that in the United States between 1970 and 2005, the percentage of disposable income spent on food fell from 13.9% to 9.8% on the average. I don't know whether the cause of this drop is due to higher incomes, lower food production costs, or a decrease in the quality of the food we're buying. Probably a little of all these, though I'd love to hear what your guests have to say about this. Regardless of the cause of this decrease in spending, maybe we as a society should think about using this extra spending power to buy food that is healthier for us and for the planet. And there's another listener who says, from Hillsburg, I'm a vendor to Buy Right of pickles and sauerkraut. While it is true that our products cost more than big chain equivalents, stores like Buy Right provide consumers with healthful, quality alternatives to the mass-produced foods that offer less quality and far less nutritional value. As for our costs, small producers have inherently higher costs due to scale and focus on quality. As one of the community of producers, I've never worked harder for less. For the most part, we're all doing this part of the business for the love of good food and the knowledge that we're doing something right for the community. Mm-hmm. And Meredith says, for those of us who can't make it to the Mission regularly and to shop at Buy Right, how do the hosts feel about Whole Foods or other major natural organic grocery store chains?
I think the natural grocery chains are doing a great job, and a lot of our work wouldn't be possible without the scale that they've provided to make better food more accessible. I still think they can do more. But it's hard, you know. If you're a company with 400 stores, you know, I admire a lot of the work that Whole Foods is doing. You know, I much prefer the smaller, more local natural food markets over the national companies. Any time that you're publicly held, you're inherently going to be beholden to your shareholders and have to make some decisions that are profit driven as opposed to values driven.
Kaylin is our next caller. Kaylin, welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to, first of all, praise you guys. I grew up on a small farm outside of Sacramento, and my grandfather was an avid farmer and worked for the state, but he didn't use any pesticides, and I couldn't agree more. When I moved to San Francisco, the food here, I was just appalled with the large chains and the lack of taste. I mean, eating stuff, it was like, what's the point? So I would rather pay more money and support local farming. I did have two quick questions. So I'm ecstatic about the new store in Visadero. Two things I wanted to ask. You mentioned the squash that I was not familiar with that was a good flesh. You said a very meaty squash, and I wanted to get the name of that.
Yeah, that's a Ragosa squash. It's an Italian heirloom. It's in the butternut family. Marikita Farm in Watsonville grows them. So unless you have a CSA with them, you're probably going to have to come to Buy Right to get that squash.
I will definitely come to Buy Right. And then the last question is Bronzino.
As you also mentioned, Buy Right is known for, in fact, I think it was written up in the New York Times, the heirloom tomatoes have gotten a lot of attention.
Yeah.
She had another question. Sorry. I just wanted to answer. Yeah.
No, I was trying to be quick because I know other people are trying to get in. Bronzino, as far as a fish, I don't know much about it. I do like it, but I stay away from sea bass just because of the farming and all the stuff. Any comments?
I believe Bronzino actually is a freshwater farm. I don't think that it's open aquaculture, but I'm not exactly sure.
Someone may know, Kaylin, and if we get a note on that, we'll read it before the hour ends. I do want to get to more calls, though, and we'll get to you next. Joe, good morning. You're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm curious. I'm a resident on Desiderio Street in that corridor, and there already is two established national grocers, which are about three blocks of your new location. So you spoke in your last call about how your 18th Street location helped build the other businesses in that neighborhood, but I think it's going to be hurting these two other businesses that are already established. We also already have a farmer's market every Sunday at Grove and Desiderio. So it seems just like poor neighborhood planning to me at this point to have another large natural grocer on that strip.
Sam's nodding his head.
We're actually hearing we're hearing that perspective from some folks in the neighborhood, but we've heard a lot more need for a lot of the other items that we sell that we're known for that aren't being provided. Our produce section is unlike any other that's available in that neighborhood, and so that's something that many, many people in the neighborhood have been dying for and asking for. There's no really good butcher in the neighborhood, and so we're going to provide a lot of the those meat products that people are yearning for. In addition, there's nowhere to actually get prepared foods, items that people need in these days when they're busy and rushed, and so those aren't available either currently in the neighborhood. So. As much as part of me agrees, and I am concerned because the last thing that I want to do is have a negative impact on people that are already existing in that neighborhood. We feel that there is a demand and a need for the quality products that we do offer and that we're known for, and we want to provide them.
And again, Sam O'Ganim's book is called Buy Right Markets, Eat Good Food, A Grocer's Guide to Shopping, Cooking, and Creating Community Through Food. And some of the recipes in that book are on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Essence is our next caller. Essence, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I love Buy Right. I love going there. I don't live in the city, but it's really one of my favorite grocery stores. And I always say that if my career in academia doesn't work out, that I would love to open my own Buy Right franchise somewhere in the East Bay.
Well, maybe we should get your phone number and give it to Sam, along with others who want to apply for jobs at Buy Right. Thank you for the call, and we'll go to another one, and that's up in Sebastopol. Carolina, good morning.
Hi. I want to commend you guys for what you're doing in supporting farmers. I live around many small family farms. I know how hard it is for them to make a living, so I commend that. But my question for you is about what community programs you have. You say that, with 18 reasons that you provide, a space for community, but it does seem like those classes are a little expensive. So how do you service the community that's already there? And, what are the programs that you provide with 18 reasons?
I mean, we were just having a board meeting yesterday and talking about this literally yesterday. This is one of the greatest challenges, not just with the programming that we do at 18 Reasons, but with in general about the true cost of food. There are inherent expenses in being able to put on a class and a class that like a cheese class that we might charge $25 to $35 for. In other schools, other venues that offer these same type of classes, they're $65 to $75. So, even though $25 to $35 might seem expensive for what it is, it's still significantly lower than a comparable program somewhere else. We're trying really hard to make our programming as affordable as possible. And one program that we do is Soup for Supper, and for literally for $5, you can come in and sit around the table and have a glass have a bowl of soup and meet your neighbors and share and it's really inexpensive and really accessible, and so we're trying to balance that out. And there are definitely programs that are in that $10 to $15 range as well, because we know that people can't afford to pay $35 consistently for a program.
Here's Rosanna, who writes, "We have the good fortune to live three blocks from Buy Right. The thing that sets Buy Right apart from others is not the phenomenal produce. I can buy almost the same rare foods I find in my home country of Spain. The thing that sets them apart is the service they provide. They know our family by name. They have seen my children grow and care about them. There is nothing they cannot find out for you, food-wise, or at least try to find out. Their answer is always yes, or let me see if I can do it. Let me find out about it. And also, Sam and Ann are tremendously charitable. Thank you for being around. I'm happy for your success. You deserve it. Another listener sent from an iPhone says, curious if Sam is related to family by the same name that own Richmond Market on 6th Avenue?
If Thermoganums were related, it's a huge clan in the Bay Area. I wish I knew all my cousins, but I don't.
Another web comment. It's funny to me that there's an idea that eating organic and locally grown food is perceived as a new concept or a trend by people that criticize it when this was always how we've eaten up until the industrial food complex. And Sean writes, I love the idea of buying local and supporting local farmers. However, we are fortunate here in California where we can have an abundance of fruits and vegetables grown in our own backyard, such as in Salinas. What about people in other parts of the country? And what's wrong with trading with other countries? Example, blueberries from Chile. As long as they're grown using the best practices, I don't see a problem with it. Well, I might add that if you take things from Chile, there is a cost to the environment just in terms of the carbon footprint. You want to say something on that, Simon?
Yeah. So there is an impact, the carbon impact, without question. But I do believe that every part of this country has a food revolution going on. There are farmers markets appearing in every state and almost every city. The seasons might be shorter if you're in Montana, but there's still a local population of farmers that are trying to grow food for their communities. And so I would say support them. Support them as much as you possibly can when they're in season. Celebrate them. Celebrate the foods that are actually indigenous to those areas that can actually grow in the areas that you live. But we can't, you know, obviously survive on just local food. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, that if you can't source it or find it locally, at least find something that is grown or produced responsibly.
On that note of celebration and urging people to find responsible, I'm thinking that, you know, like the Gideon Bible used to be in every motel room. Now you got Michael Pollan in almost every major, well, restaurant and food source that are trying to do the kind of work that you guys are doing. And congratulations on it. And on the book, Buy Right Markets, Eat Good Food. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Simon. Good to have you here on Forum. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Kevin Guillory, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.